Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. president speaks out about a very touchy subject in Vietnam. We get details of a new report on healthcare workers coming under attack. Hear the story of one rags-to-riches Vietnamese immigrant to the U.S. And singing Me Too in her latest song is pop star Meghan Trainor.
She's a lot of fun, and her music is a lot of fun and catchy. She's definitely got the hooks in her song as a songwriter. She knows what it takes to have a hit song.
It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama says the Vietnamese and American people are embarking on a 100-year journey together. The U.S. leader made this statement in a wide-ranging address at Hanoi's National Convention Center today before more than 2,000 people, including some Vietnamese government officials. Correspondent Steve Herman monitored the address from our bureau in Bangkok and joins us on the line. Welcome, Steve.
Yes. Hello, Susan.
Hey, the president touched on the very sensitive topic of human rights.
Yes, he noted that the rights to freedom of speech, freedom of the press, as well as freedom of assembly are all enshrined in Vietnam's constitution. And he said, in his view, upholding these rights is not a threat to stability, which, of course, is not how the communist government of Vietnam has traditionally seen this. And the backdrop, of course, is there's some 104, at least, political prisoners in Vietnam, and we've been getting reports of additional people being detained in the past week, just ahead of the president's visit.
And what is the Vietnamese government's views of human rights?
Well, what's in the Constitution is not how things are on the streets, and we saw an example of this today. One of the dissidents who was supposed to meet with the president said earlier in the day, he was forced into a car by police, driven out of Hanoi and detained for 5 hours to prevent him from meeting with the U.S. president. And if you talk to activists outside the country, they will tell you that despite the characterization that President Obama gave of some quote-unquote modest progress on human rights, they believe that there's been little or no progress in Vietnam, and they're quite disappointed with the stance by not only the Vietnamese government, but by how the United States has, in their eyes, soft-pedaled all this today.
The president was able to meet with some Vietnamese civil society members, as they're called. How did that go?
Well, he did note that several other activists who were invited were prevented from coming, as he put it, for various reasons. And the president said that there are significant areas of concern, and he praised those members of civil society who have been willing to make their voices heard.
Did the president touch on the issue of the Vietnam War?
Yes, he did, although I would describe the bulk of his speech today as forward-looking rather than delving on the past. He did at the beginning note that there is a war monument in Hanoi, which mentions that 3 million Vietnamese soldiers and civilians died in the war between the United States and South Vietnam versus North Vietnam. And he praised Secretary of State John Kerry, who was in the audience, saying that he had been at the forefront of, as a war veteran, of bringing this relationship forward.
Well, you've spoken about how the human rights activists have responded. What is the government's response to the president's address today?
We haven't seen any official statement that has come out. Now, there were some Vietnamese government officials that were in the audience, and I did not get to see the looks on their faces when the president was mentioning this fairly sensitive topic. But he's saying, you know, it's time to look forward in the bilateral relationship, and that you know, there are going to be disagreements on human rights and other issues. But hopefully that this is the beginning of a 100-year journey together, as he put it.
Thank you, Steve, for speaking with us from our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok.
You're most welcome, Susan.
Our social media reporter, Andrew Palchewski, is joining us here in the studio, and he has a little bit of information about a story we're going to have a little later on in our program today, and it's about what's going on social media concerning this Vietnamese immigrant.
Yeah, well, the Vietnam trip for President Obama continues to trend, and while that story is trending, we're seeing these other, what I'm calling, news-adjacent stories, and this story that we're going to hear in a little bit is one of them, this Vietnamese immigrant who came to the U.S., and I won't spoil it, but he did well for himself, we'll just say that. But these stories, we're seeing a lot of these pop up as the social media conversation is talking about the president's trip. So you can actually find that story on the VOA Now Facebook page. It's facebook.com/VOA Now.
But there's also something about Egypt Air, and everybody's interested in this story, the tragedy.
Absolutely. Well, investigators are now saying that there appears to be evidence of explosives or an explosion. There's a lot of back and forth on this. They've determined this based on, I guess, some of the bodies that they've recovered and investigated from the crash victims. But this is prompting a lot of social media questions. What does that mean exactly if there's evidence of an explosion? Does it mean it was terrorism? Could it be mechanical? What does this mean for even airline security looking at the broader picture? This is something we're covering actually this week on our show, hashtag VOA, which you can find more information about on Facebook, facebook.com/hashtag VOA, twitter.com/hashtag VOA, @hashtag VOA on Twitter and Instagram. Well, we're covering this week because it is a huge social media topic and has implications for, you know, days, weeks, months to come.
And it's a special day for a famous singer, and his name is Bob Dylan.
Yes, happy birthday to Bob Dylan.
Happy birthday,
Bob. He is 75 years old today, and a lot of the social media is saying, oh my gosh, Bob Dylan is that old. People can't believe it. But, you know, as we often see when there are these big milestone birthdays for celebrities, especially artists, people sharing their favorite works. So they're sharing their favorite Bob Dylan lyrics, Bob Dylan songs. So there's a lot of love for Bob Dylan today.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
In the news, Obama says upholding Vietnamese rights is not a threat to society. Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces announce an operation to liberate Raqqa, and Greek authorities begin evacuating the informal refugee camp in Idomeni. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Do you want to get a good look at Mars? Well, now is the time to catch the red planet as it makes its closest approach to Earth in the past 11 years. Called an opposition by astronomers, this is a time period that happens roughly every 26 months when Mars and the Sun are on opposite sides of the Earth. According to NASA, this year's opposition started on May 18th and will end on June 3rd. May 30th is when the two planets are at its closest point since early April 2014. That's when Mars will be about 75 million kilometers from Earth. The distance between planets during opposition may vary. In August 2003, Mars was even closer at almost 56 million kilometers from Earth. This was the red planet's closest approach in 60,000 years. If you missed this year's opposition, you'll have to wait until July of 2018. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Healthcare workers and facilities are under attack in conflict zones in 19 countries around the world, according to the Safeguarding Health in Conflict Coalition. The organization has issued a new report, No Protection, No Respect, that looks at the issue during 2015 and the first 3 months of this year. And joining us on the line is Physicians for Human Rights Director of International Policy, Susanna Serkin. Welcome, Susanna.
Thank you.
Now, this report is very serious. And what did you find?
Well, this coalition of more than 30 organizations found that in 19 countries, health is under attack, including bombing and shelling of hospitals and clinics, the arrest and sometimes torture and even execution of health workers, the obstruction of health care in many countries where convoys are interrupted, sometimes medical supplies are looted, health workers have been kidnapped, and in far too many places, hospitals and clinics are bombed and destroyed from the air, sometimes in indiscriminate attacks, and unfortunately, in a number of cases, as intentional attacks, especially in the horrific conflict in Syria, where more than 300 health facilities in the last 5 years have been bombed and often completely destroyed.
You mentioned Syria. Could you mention some of the other nations?
Yes. Some of the places where these attacks have been most severe are Iraq, Yemen, Sudan, South Sudan, Somalia, the Ivory Coast, and Central African Republic, as well as Afghanistan. In Nigeria and Pakistan, health workers have also been attacked doing polio vaccinations, which is, as everyone knows, an incredibly important prevention for a very serious disease.
What would be the motive, say, in Syria for attacking workers, health workers, and facilities?
You know, Syria has, in our experience, seen the most egregious systematic attacks on health facilities since the conflict in Syria began in 2011. It appears that the way that President Bashar al-Assad in Syria and his military viewed health professionals and health facilities is that they are essentially considered the enemy for treating those populations in this brutal civil war that the government considers to be the enemy. So as I've been putting it recently, the doctor of my enemy is my enemy. And that is an absolute blatant violation of international humanitarian law, the Geneva Conventions, otherwise known as the laws of war. And these are serious war crimes. Physicians for Human Rights considers these attacks to be crimes against humanity in the way that they're being carried out in Syria.
What can be done about this?
One of the things that our coalition is calling for is better data, because we don't really have any systematic global effort to document and investigate these kinds of attacks. And the second big gap and essential component to minimizing these crimes is accountability. And that includes referral of these crimes where they're most egregious to international tribunals, such as the International Criminal Court. Fortunately, in Syria, the effort by the UN Security Council to refer these crimes to the International Criminal Court failed due to the veto in 2014 by Russia and China.
Well, thank you very much, Susanna, for speaking with us today.
Thank you for paying attention to this important crisis.
Coming up on International Edition, a Vietnamese refugee makes it big in the U.S., and a song with a musical hook. With the changing U.S. relationship with Vietnam during President Obama's visit this week, we've been looking at some Vietnamese experiences here in the States. One is the story of a young man who fled his nation with his family at the end of the Vietnam War and ended up in America. Correspondent Jim Randall joins us once again here in the studio. Welcome, Jim.
Hi. Glad to be back.
Thank you. Please tell us this story.
Well, David Chuong and his family fled Vietnam at the end of the war in a boat. It was about 6 meters long and 2 or 3 meters wide. And it was a leaky, old boat, and the engine conked out on them. They had to be rescued at sea. And they ended up spending a couple of years in a refugee camp in the Philippines. Eventually ended up in the United States. And fast forward a couple decades, the guy is running a $300 million recycling business.
Wow.
And employs 300 people from, some Vietnamese, but people from every ethnic part of the United States.
Well, you got to fill us in a little bit between.
Well, there's a bit. Yeah, there's quite a process between the two. They ended up in the Tenderloin district of San Francisco, and that was a poor neighborhood. And they had run a paper mill back in Vietnam before they left. So when they saw cardboard on the street
in the United States.
In the United States. Everybody else saw trash. They saw opportunity. So they gathered this stuff up, and eventually they were able to scrape together about $700, which wasn't a whole lot of money. And they were able to persuade a Chinese church in Chinatown in San Francisco to lend them the rest of the money needed to buy a used truck. Well, they prospered with that. They made a small company, and eventually that company, they sold that and made a much larger company in nearby Oakland, California, across the bay, and they expanded from there into San Jose, and they're running a huge company now. And I went to the plant, and I spoke with Mr. Duong at great length, And he was very gracious about it. And the plant is really cool. I mean, it's incredibly high tech, but there's also a lot of you know, just human beings sorting stuff out. But there are computer imaging things that cause a puff of air to blow through the waste stream, and the lightweight plastic, which is not valuable, gets separated from the fiber, which is recyclable and is quite valuable. Other things happen. Obviously, they use magnets to sort the iron out of it. That's pretty straightforward. What I had never seen before was they put an electrical charge in the stream of recyclables, which causes the crushed aluminum cans to go flying out of the waste stream and into this separate bin, which is... I don't fully understand how that works, but I can tell you it sure does.
Okay. And you tell me he is now operating back in Vietnam.
Very unusual. Not that many Vietnamese Americans have gone back to Vietnam. He's operating. He was invited back to the country by the Vietnamese government, which they're quite aware that the country has environmental problems. And by recycling, they can reduce the amount of landfill. By recycling, they can become a more efficient economy. And by doing this recycling, he's operating, the largest recycling plant in the country. It provides a good number of jobs. And he's very proud of the fact that he's doing it all with technology from the United States and doing it to U.S. standards to kind of set the standard for the rest of the country and to demonstrate that there's a good way to do this. Yes, you can make money doing it, and it preserves the environment in practical ways.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for sharing that great story.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
This is Green Beat for a healthier planet.
A chimpanzee is one of our closest relatives, sharing more than 95% of our DNA. But that similarity doesn't prevent chimps from being victims at the hands of humans. Stephen Ngulu is a veterinarian at the Sweetwater Sanctuary in Kenya.
There is a bushmeat trade in West Africa, in Central Africa. There is illegal trade in great apes. Illegal trade in great apes to Europe, to Russia, to Asia.
Sweetwater Sanctuary holds nearly 40 orphaned and abused chimpanzees. The ideal situation, says Dr. Ngulu, would be to return the chimps to their home in the wild.
They shouldn't be in their natural environment, but we as humans are destroying that.
1 million chimpanzees used to roam freely across West and Central Africa. But the Jane Goodall Institute says their numbers have dwindled to just a few hundred thousand due to illegal hunting and trade and loss of habitat. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
Pop singer Meghan Trainor has a new song out, and VOA's Larry London at Border Crossings has joined me here in the studio, and he tells me not only is she a pop singer, but she's a very popular pop singer. And Larry, tell us about this new song.
Not only is Meghan Trainor popular, but she's also a great songwriter. In fact, that's what her first foray into the music business was, writing songs. She's written hits for Rascal Flatts and Fifth Harmony, and now she's written several for herself, most notably 2014's All About That Bass, which you may have heard a few times.
I remember that song. Exactly. All About the Bass, About the Bass, About the Bass.
There you go. And that is Meghan Trainor.
Like her, don't
Meghan's
it?
Job is safe, Susan. You're not going to take any record deals away soon. She's also had Lips Are Moving and Dear Future Husband, and she sang a duet with John Legend called Like I'm Gonna Lose You. And most recently, her big song has been No, which was the first song off of her new album that went on sale May 13th. Which she's titled Thank You. And now her second single is out, and I really like the new song.
What's it called?
Me Too.
Who's that sexy thing I see over there? That's me, standing in the mirror. What's that icy thing hanging around my neck? That's gold. Show me some respect.
It's a catchy song, and Meghan credits lots of different singers for influencing her music style. She says she was a fan of Britney Spears. She likes Frank Sinatra. She likes Missy Elliott. She likes soca music. She likes all kinds of things.
That's a range. That's quite a range.
Quite a range, and she's got that range, too, and she's got that bass. But she's very talented, and she can do just about anything. Now, one of the things that caused a lot of controversy with this new song, Me Too, was the video that came out a few weeks ago. Her record company decided that they wanted to Photoshop to edit her waistline.
Oh, I heard about this.
They thought that she was a little too large to sell records, apparently, so they made her look thinner. Well, she took great offense to that.
Well, they didn't tell her in advance.
Didn't
I think they just did.
Didn't tell her in advance, didn't discuss it. She said she was embarrassed, humiliated. She pulled the video off and said, you put my body the way it is. I like me how I am, and so do my fans. And she's all about self-image, body image, and empowerment. So she said, that's not the message I want my fans to receive from this. So let's go with, you know, with who I am. And so they put the, you know, actual version of her on there. It looks great. She's dancing around in the same kind of blue sequin, shiny, glittery dress she wore to the Billboard Awards.
Well, tell me about Me Too.
Me Too is a great song. I like Me Too. It's up-tempo. It's fun. It's catchy. I think in order to have a hit song these days, you have to have a hook. And this song has a great hook, and I really like the song. The video to the song starts off where she wakes up in her bedroom, and over her bed is the sign that says Meghan Trainor. And, you know, she just goes through her routine of waking up. It's all you know, in character. It's not really her life. But, you know, and she talks about how great things are for her, and you wish you could be like me, too.
No dirt on her?
There's no dirt on her. She's still looking for a boyfriend. Hasn't found one yet. Still can't get love in her life. She's got all the success. She's a lot of fun to be around. I had a chance to interview her on Border Crossings.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, well, she was great. She was lovely to talk to. And she is out on tour this year for her album. This is going to be the second time around. She was forced to stop the tour last year because of throat surgery. But she's okay now, she's better, and she's going out on tour again for her new album.
With her range, is she going to be around with us for a long time?
I would say so. She's a lot of fun, and her music is a lot of fun, and as I said earlier, catchy. She's definitely got the hooks in her song as a songwriter. She knows what it takes to have a hit song.
Okay, thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you, Susan.
It's catchy, and I think I caught it. Thanks for joining us today for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Embassy in Yaoundé welcomed students from the International Marketing and Regional Integration Programs of the International Relations Institute of Cameroon, or IRIC, to the James Baldwin Information Resource Center, or IRC, to acquaint themselves with the functioning of the center and to have access to relevant sources for their academic research work. The James Baldwin Information Resource Center is a component of the Public Affairs section of the U.S. Embassy in Yaoundé. It is a public lending library for students, academia, and the general public, and a reference research center which provides comprehensive and authoritative information on the United States. Embassy Affairs Officer Roberto Quiroz II congratulated the students on their admission into such a prestigious institution as IRIC. This is an effort the United States of America is proud to offer Cameroon in a support role, he said. The real credit for all efforts go to Cameroon and Lake Chad Basin nations because they are leading all security efforts. All Cameroonians must be proud of how their sons and daughters in uniform have not hesitated to defend their homeland and fellow citizens against Boko Haram's attacks, which have victimized innocent civilians and targeted women and girls. Mr. Quiroz said Boko Haram will be defeated so that Cameroonians can build a future of peace and prosperity through their own talents and ideas. He also underscored other areas of partnership between both nations, including the protection of refugees fleeing violence, U.S. support for a vibrant civil society, growing private sector to create jobs, and a free media, and joint efforts to protect wildlife. Mr. Quiroz also explained how diplomacy is an instrument of advancing good governance goals, adding that public perception of their performance as IRIC students and future diplomats and civil servants is very important as well. Congratulations on your achievements, he told the students. As future leaders in your fields, your first and foremost priority will be to advance the interests of Cameroon. That is a great responsibility. The United States is proud to work with its partner Cameroon for the benefit of both nations, the region, and Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.